Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'o Daf Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the top of Daf Vov. We continue with the discussion of 2 days of Yom Tov. When we speak about 2 days of Yom Tov, we speak about the 2 days that are observed outside of Eretz Yisrael. We speak about the first 2 days of Pesach, the first 2 days of Sukkot, the 2 days of Shavuos. And we also make mention, in our previous sugi, we discussed the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Even though on a strictly analytic or qualitative basis, there is a difference between the 2 days of Yom Tov, Shlosh Regolim, versus the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, in the sugi that we're going to deal with now, we'll see mention of both. The topic heading that we have on the side, the nosei, we've written the following: mace. Someone died b'yom tov rishon, on the first day of a holiday, and the body needs to be buried. Yis'asku bo amamim. Non-Jews are to tend to the body. A Jew cannot bury a body on the first day of Yom Tov. That involves digging out a grave, which is an isur malocha, and hence prohibited. But Yom Tov Sheni, on the second day of Yom Tov, and we add Gam Rosh Hashanah, Yisasku Boy Yisrael. Even Jews are allowed to deal with the burial. Before we go further, it's important for us to mention a disclaimer that you, those of you who have heard many Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shurim, are well aware that we do not claim to be teaching or issuing any rulings concerning actual halacha, which we call halacha lemaisa. We are learning Gemara. Gemara is the basis, it's the root of halacha lemaisa, but it's not the last word. So what you learn in the context of our Gemara marking shiurim are not to be extended to actual halachic practice. For that, one has to consult with the Sforim, the Sifrei Halacha, that Paskin Shailis, as well as, of course, consulting authentic rabbinic authorities. That having been said, Omar Rav at the top line, Mace, B'yom Tov Rishon, Yisasku Bo Amamim. If a person dies and there is a body that needs to be buried, if you're on Yom Tov Rishon, on the first day of Yom Tov, then Yisasku means involvement through Amamim, through non-Jews. B'yom Tov Sheni, if you're dealing with a body that needs to be buried on the second day of Yom Tov, Yisasku Bo Yisrael. A Jew is authorized, is allowed to take care of the burial. V'afilu b'shnei yomim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah. This applies also with regard to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, meaning the second day of Rosh Hashanah. If there is a body that needs to be buried, a Jew can do so. The brackets that you see here are designed in part, they're designed to skip, and you keep reading Omar Marzutra, skipping the brackets, you would continue reading Omar Marzutra Lo Amoron Elo Dishtohi. In other words, the halacha of Yisasku Bo Yisrael is qualified. That's why we skip, so that you can have a smooth reading. The halacha that was said just before the brackets was that on the second day of Yom Tov, even if it's the second day of Rosh Hashanah, Jew can do so, Marzutra qualifies. Now, when you get to Marzutra, you'll notice that his name is double underlined. There is a machlokus between Marzutra and Rav Ashi. Marzutra qualifies, and Rav Ashi does not qualify. It's across the boards. You'll see that it's mutter for the Jew on the second day of Yom Tov. We'll get to that. We'll get back to that, but first let's go through the bracketed section. We were mentioning that the brackets were there in part for skipping. On the other hand, by reading the Gemara straight through, you'll also see it very smooth reading as well. So the Gemara had said on the third line that even on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, a Jew can be engaged in the burial of the body, treating the second day of Rosh Hashanah as you would treat a second day of Yom Tov in Chutz Laretz. Masha'en came to Beitza, as opposed to the way we have dealt with the egg. In our previous shiur, we spent a lot of time pointing out the distinction between, technically speaking, back on Daf Dalet, the distinction between the second day of Yom Tov in Chutz Laretz, where the egg is something that you can be very lenient about and allow it, as opposed to the second day of Rosh Hashanah, where we were not so lenient. The Rashi on the second line from the top says, "Mashikain v'beitzel inyan beitzel lo hekelu v'yom tev sheni de Rosh Hashanah lahashvis l'shel golius de Rosh Hashanah noldo b'zeh asura b'zeh." What Rashi is telling us is that in the case of Rosh Hashanah, you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. The first, if an egg is laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, it's not going to be allowed on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. However, in the 2 days of Yom Tov, Yom Tov sheni shel golius, if it's laid on the first day, it's mutter. The egg is mutter on the second day. So, in our Gemara, you can see a contrast between the second day of Rosh Hashanah vis-a-vis a mace versus second day of Rosh Hashanah vis-a-vis the egg that had been laid on the previous day. Nahar doi amri, af bebeitza. Nahar doi goes very far. And they say that the second day of Rosh Hashanah, you can allow the beitza that was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And the explanation. Dema daitoch. What might you have thought as reason for forbidding the egg on the second day of Rosh Hashanah? Dilma me'abri lei le'elul. Because they may have extended Elul from being, instead of a 29 day and day 30 being Rosh Hashanah, Elul ended up being a 30-day month, and 31 became Rosh Hashanah. And as a result, Rosh Hashanah was a 2-day holiday. Ha, Omar Rav Chinuna Bar Kahana, Omar Rav, but it has been said, Miyamois Ezra V'Elech, Lo Matzinu Elul Mu'ubar. From the time of Ezra onwards, we never found Elul to have been extended by a day. So that, practically speaking, Rosh Hashanah was always a one-day holiday. If we take a look at Rashi on the first narrow line, Dilma Ma'abri that if they would have extended Elul, in other words, they got to day 30, and day 30 of Elul was anticipated as being the first day of Rosh Hashanah, and they would observe it thusly, but it might have happened that they would extend Elul by a day instead of a 29-day month, making it into 30 days. And Rosh Hashanah then would be on the next day. As Rashi says, V'lasi shnei yomim, kagon shelo bo ad yom shloshim ve'echad. For example, witnesses may not have shown up on day 30 and shown up for the first time only on day 31. So that might be the reason for asering the egg on the second day. Rashi continues, Mimois Ezra v'Elech, the Afopisha Tiknu, even though they made a rule not to Makabel Edim after mid-afternoon, Lo Ira Shebo Edim Mina Mincha Ulamalo Chutzmel Sapam. It never happened that witnesses came so late in the day, except for that one time that the mess up resulted. V'adayin lo niskano, but at that point, that was the first and only time. So there was no takuna at that point when that happened. Hay denokan mos Ezra mishum de biyomov ibruhu dechtib Ezra biyom hasheni rosh hashanah mishtoi. The reason that this point in time was cited from the days of Ezra, because in his day, in fact, they did extend Elul by one day, causing 2 days of Rosh Hashanah to have been observed. But as far as Nahar Doi is concerned in our Gemara, that event of having a 2 day Rosh Hashanah because of Elul needing to be extended never really happened. It never happened, certainly did not happen under the guise of a takuna. So there's no need for asering an egg that's laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah to aser it on the next day. Now, the truth is that people who lived far away from Beis Din, so they didn't know when Tishrei began, so they would observe 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. However, inevitably, the first day of Rosh Hashanah was the real first of Tishrei, and the next day was only because they were in doubt. And in that sense, it's no different. The 2 days of Rosh Hashanah for the people living far away was no different than any 2 day Yom Tov, where the second day is observed as a result of a doubt. And we know that the egg that's laid on the first day is mutter on the second day. Omar Marzutra, Lo Amoron Ella, and now Marzutra qualifies the din we said before about Yisasku Bo Yisrael, that is stated Ella de Ishtohi, where the body has been lying around and it's starting to decompose or decay, and it's a foul smell is developing. Avolo Ishtohi, Mashinon Laif. However, you are on the, let's say, someone dies on the second day of Yom Tov. Let's say, for argument's sake, in the latter part of the day. So that from the point of death till the end of the day, not much time is going to go by. The body isn't going to start to decay. We don't allow Jews to involve themselves in burying that corpse under such circumstances, even though it is the second day of Yom Tov. Rav Ashi Omar, Afal Gav de Lo Ishtoi, Nami Lo Mashinon Lei. Rav Ashi is more lenient in what he allows and says even if the body isn't delayed, isn't lying around and decaying, even if it's a, let's say, a freshly dead individual, so we don't delay and allow the Jews to bury him. My time, oh, why? After all, it is the second day of Yom Tov. Answer, Yom Tov Sheni, Legabi Mace. The way we view the second day of Yom Tov in the context of the dead, the corpse, Ke Chol Shavyuha Rabbonon. The Rabbonon term it a weekday. And how far does this consideration go? Afilu, Lemegas Le Glima, Ulemegas Le Aso. Even to the extent of cutting shrouds, glimobi shrouds, and cutting myrtle branches. The Rashi points out that it was customary to take hadasim, myrtle branches, and put them on the coffin as a sign of honor. So even those non-direct corpse burial matters, even though they involve absolute melachos, were allowed to be done on the second day of Yom Tov. Omer Ravina ve'idna diga chabori chayshinon. Ravina, though, restrains this leniency and says that nowadays, since we have chabori, it's the name of an evil nation that had taken over the area that the Jews lived in, and if and Rashi points out in the days of the Persians, and these people would force Jews to do malachas, and the Jews were able to push them off on the grounds that it's our holiday, so they were at least that they respected. However, if they would see us Jewish people tending to corpses and burying them and cutting shrouds and doing malachas for the benefit of the corpse, they would take full advantage, so to speak, of the Jewish community and force them to do all kinds of malachas on Yom Tov Sheni, and therefore we are choshesh, we take that into consideration and do not cut the shrouds and cut the hadassim for the benefit of the dead. The Rashi explains that let's look at the Rashi together. Diko Chabori Uma Risho Shoyvimei Parsem, an evil nation in the Persian era, and that's where the Jews lived. That's the geographic area associated with Babylonia. The Babylonians where there was a major Jewish exile. Was an area that was subsequently conquered by the Persians, and other nations followed. And the Chabori are during the Talmudic period that we are referring to. So they are an evil nation. The Koyfenes Yisrael Lasis Molochton, they take advantage of the Jews and force them to do their needs, their work. These people, as even though they were wicked, they at least had respect for Jewish holidays, and they could be pushed off from their insistence on us doing malachas on the grounds that it's our holiday. If, however, the Chaborim would see us burying our dead, they would force us to do their own malachas, other malachas. The case of the shrouds that we spoke about in the Gemara about cutting shrouds, so Rashi's machadesh that it's not a case where the corpse needs these shrouds. In fact, there were other shrouds available, because if these were the only shrouds available, why does the Gemara use the term afilu, even cutting shrouds? My afilu koma ho amrino b'yavosheni sasu b'Yisrael v'esek ze chatzivas kivroi v'chituch tachrichim. We had said earlier that Yisasku b'Yisrael, and that term Yisasku b'Yisrael would mean that's a reference to the basic needs of the mace, and the basic needs include hewing out a grave and cutting shrouds that are necessary. So therefore, the Gemara, when it talks about even shrouds, is going beyond the absolute necessity, i.e., a case where there were shrouds anyway available. Let us continue. Let's turn back to the Gemara. You can see we have a slash mark indicating that this is now a new discussion. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, and we've written Shochach Loniach Eruv Tavshilin Lifnei Rosh Hashanah. We'll be discussing a situation where someone forgot to make an Eruv Tavshilin. That's just a word about an Eruv Tavshilin. This is a case where you have Yom Tov followed by a Shabbos, and you're not allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov for Shabbos. So what's a person supposed to do with regard to his Shabbos meals and their preparation? So there's a rabbinic enactment known as Eruv Tavshilin, where if you start your cooking for Shabbos from before Yom Tov, then that which you do on Yom Tov, even if you're doing it for Shabbos, will be allowed, because it's not considered as if you're starting your Shabbos preparations on Yom Tov, you're simply continuing it. That's one approach taken to the understanding of Eruv Tavshilin. In our Gemara, we're going to be alluding to a case or a situation where someone forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin, and you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, and followed by a Shabbos. What is he to do? Ravino havi Yosef kamei de Rav Ashi. Ravino was seated in front of Rav Ashi. B'shnei yomim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah. He was in Rav Ashi's presence during the Rosh Hashanah holiday. Chazia d'ave otziv. Ravina noticed that Rav Ashi was upset, was saddened. Omar le amai otziv ma. Ravina asked, "Why are you upset?" Omar le. Rav Ashi answered, "Delo osivi eruve tavshilin, because I didn't prepare an erev tavshilin, which would have otherwise enabled me to bake and cook from Yontif for Shabbos." Omar le, so Ravino says, "Veloisiv mar ha'idna, why not make an eruv tavshilin right now on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which would happen in this case, of course, it's a Thursday, and make an eruv tavshilin with a tanai stating a condition." If we look in Rashi first, and then use Rashi as an introduction to the Gemara, Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines, ha'idna. Now, b'yom tov rishon v'chamishi, on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, it's a Thursday in this case, v'chamishi b'shabbos, means the fifth day of the week, v'al t'nai hu omer, and with a condition, you would state, im hayom hu chayol ulamachar kodesh, if today, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, is really a weekday, and tomorrow, Friday, is the holy day, then yehei eruv, then let what I am doing now, what I'm declaring now, as the Erev, by the way, is a food. That's some baked food and some cooked food that you set aside, representing the beginning of your Shabbos preparations. You would set it aside and make this condition. If today, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, is really a weekday and tomorrow is a holy day, so then it is a good Eruv. V'im hayom kodesh l'mocher chol, and if today is really a holy day, and tomorrow, Friday, is a weekday, eini tzorach l'kach, I don't even need an Erev, because tomorrow being Erev Shabbos, I'll cook normally on Friday for Shabbos. This is Ravino's, we'll say, comforting to Rav Ashi. Let's read this again in the Gemara. Omar le, v'loisiv mor ho'idna, why don't you, Rav Ashi, place an Eruv Tavshilin today, stating the condition that we just read in the Rashi. Mi lo omar Rava, does Rava not say, meniach odom eruve tavshilin miyomtov l'chavero umasne? When you have 2 days of Yom Tov and Shabbos follows, so you make an Erev on the first day with the conditions that we just mentioned, that if today is a holy day, if today is a weekday and tomorrow is the holy day, then this is a good Erev, and if today is a weekday and tomorrow is a holy day, so then my Erev is good from right now. Omar le, Rav Ashi says back to Ravina, Amar dioma Rava, you can say that when Rava said his din, b'shnei yomim tovim shel Golias, that's true with regard to the 2 days of the other, of the thrice year festivals, pilgrimage festivals, which we call the Shlosh Regolim, where in Chutz Laretz 2 days are observed, and we know that only one of the 2 days really has sanctity, and the other day is a weekday, but it's observed as a holiday only because of a minhag, of a custom. B'shnei yomim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah mi omar? However, would Rava have said the same thing with regard to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, that one day is holy and the other day is chol, is mundane, is a weekday? No, he certainly wouldn't have said that with regard to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, as we have discussed quite extensively in our previous sukkios, our previous shurim, pointing out and emphasizing the difference between the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah versus the 2 days of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias. Ravina asks, what do you mean? What do you mean that Rosh Hashanah is so different? Vo Amri Nahardoi, Af Beitza Muteres. did Nahardoi, and you can use the arrow to the left-hand side of the Gemara text and align this with the arrow above, there we saw Nahardoi saying that the egg on the laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is mutter on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, making it just like the 2 days of other Yom Tovim, at which we call in halachic terms two kedushos, one being holy and the other being mundane. So Rosh Hashanah is like all the other holidays. So just like on all the other holidays, Rava says you can place an Eruv Tavshilin on the first day, state a Tnai, a condition, and do the same on the second day, and you have a good Eruv Tavshilin to allow cooking from Friday to Shabbos. So the same thing with the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Omar Le Rav Mordechi. Rav Mordechi was a student of Rav Ashi. He interjects, Beferush Omali Mor, Rav Ashi told me explicitly, Delo Savar Leho de Nahardoi. He, Rav Ashi, does not subscribe to the leniency of Nahardoi. And hence, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are different than the 2 days of other Yomim Tovim. And hence, what you, Ravina, were trying to comfort me, Rav Ashi, is not really effective. And so I'm left with a problem of I have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and I did not make an Erev Tavshilin. I don't know what to do. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that a new idea follows. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. Efroyach Shenoilad Yotzami Beit Soso, and a chick hatched. It means it exited its shell. B'yom tov. Mahu l'shochto l'ochlo. Can you slaughter it and eat it? Now, before Yom Tov set in, so it was not, say, it was not edible. You couldn't eat it. It was an unhatched chick in its shell. It now comes out on Yom Tov. What is the din? Can I slaughter it? Now the Gemara. Tosis points out a detail that maybe some of you might ask from having seen this in a previous daf. For us to talk about the chick being able to be eaten, in order to be, let's say, according to all the deos. In other words, in order to cover your bases, because this is a machlokas, the issue of does it need to have its eyes opened as well. Otherwise, there's a machlokas whether it's mutter to eat, to slaughter and eat. So Tosus adds over here, Nira Loimar, in the Dibur Masl, Efroch, Shenol, Beyom Tov, Tosus says, Nira Loma, Disrami, that it worked out, Sheniftachu Einov Hayom, that it also, the chick exited the egg, and it opened its eyes. Ilon Fulainov, Kaimulon, Dafilu, Bechoil, Osir. If it didn't open its eyes, so we paskin, says Tosus, we rule that even if it's a weekday, you have a chick with unopened eyes, it's not allowed. So that's a detail. But let's go back to our Gemara. Itmar, Efroach Shenolad B'Yomtov, a chick hatches from its shell on Yomtov. Rav Omar Osir, Rav says you cannot slaughter it. Ushmuel V'Temer Rav Yochanan Amar Mutter, and Shmuel, some say Rav Yochanan says that it is allowed. Rav Omar Osir, Muktzehu, Rav says it's forbidden because it wasn't prepared, it wasn't available at the onset of Yomtov, and hence something that's not available at the onset of Yom Tov, when the Shkia takes place and the new day, the Yom Tov enters, if it's not accessible, so it is Muktzeh, it's considered set aside and not Mutter, not allowed. Ushmuel V'Temor Rabbi Yochanan Omar Mutter, it is allowed. Hayul Umatir Atzmoi B'Shchita. Since upon exiting the shell, we allow it now becomes allowed to be shechted. This is of course a non-Yom Tov consideration. While it's in the shell, you can't eat it. Now that it comes out of the shell, it becomes mutter through shechita. So we say, since it becomes mutter through shechita, we're also matir the iser muktzah as well. Amri le Rav Kanav Rav Asi. l'Rav. So Rav Kahana Rasi, they turned to Rav, who was restrictive, and they ask him, "V'chima bein zeh? What's the difference between the chick hatching from the shell? Le'egel shenoylad b'yom tov. A calf that's born on Yom Tov. If a calf is born on Yom Tov, it is mutter to be shechted immediately," and everyone agrees with that. So just like a calf exiting, you know, it's being born is mutter, let the chicken being born, i.e. through hatching, let it be mutter. Omar Lahu, Rav answers, there is a fundamental difference. The egel was mutter even before it was born. If you would have slaughtered the mother while it was pregnant, namely moments before the calf was born, if you went ahead and slaughtered the mother, that slaughtering is effective for the calf as well. So since the calf was always allowed, i.e. not only after it's born but before it's born, so its birth doesn't represent a new heter, a new matir that wasn't there before. So you can't compare the case of the egel. The egel essentially never was in a state of muktzeh. Question. They ask on Rav, Uma bein ze le'egel shenolad min ha-trefa. What's the difference between a chick hatched from a shell and a calf born from a mother that you're not allowed to eat because the mother is a trefa? So here you can't say that the egel was accessible through the mother by shechting the mother, because by the shechting of the mother was not effective. It wasn't a shechita that had any effect. So it wouldn't have been matir, the egel. And yet you see, even though it wasn't muchan agavimo, if it's born on Yom Tov, you're allowed to shecht it and eat it. Say the same thing then by the chick in the shell. It wasn't accessible. It hatches, it comes forth, now it becomes. It should become accessible. It should become mutter. Shosik Rav. Rav did not answer. So as far as Rav Asi and Rav Kahana, the chick coming from the shell, hatching from the shell, should be allowed. Rav didn't respond. He kept quiet. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to be using a trapezoid or volcano shape, flipping around the direction in order to be able to follow the give and take in the Gemara. On the side, we indicate this under our Mivneh heading. We call this a Ma'akav. Ma'akav means to keep track. Narrow part facing upwards, Kushya. And the question is, Loma Shosik Rav. Why did Rav keep quiet? And Tshuva, the inverted shape, Tshuva is a response. Shtikas Rav. On the one hand, Rav keeps quiet. Im Egel, we're continuing to read our note on the side. First we're going to explain Rav's silence, and then we're going to deal with Rabba in our note. Rabba is the following name in the Gemara, where maybe you want to read the next couple words of the Gemara, three lines from the bottom. Omar Rabba v'itema Rav Yosef. Rabba, some versions have Rav Yosef, my time is Shosik Rav. Why did Rav keep quiet? He had an answer. Rav had a response. Why the case of the egel from the trefa is more lenient than the case of the chick hatching from its shell. So as far as Rav was concerned, Rav had an easy answer. The problem for us right now is, why did Rav keep quiet? So let's read the note on the side. Shtikas Rav, im egel shebemei trefa, if the case of the calf in the womb of an unfit mother animal, makbil, if it's parallel, makbil means parallel le'efresh shebesocha beitza, to the case of the chick in the shell, loma ha'egel achrei shenol al biyomdov muter, why is it that the calf that exits, that's born from a trefa, is allowed, ve'efroch achrei shiyotzen biyomdov aser, and the efroch, the chick, after it exits the shell, why should it be aser? Rabbah. Now, Rabbah sees a clear difference. Egel betrefa eino dome lefrosh shebesoch habeitza. The egel in the trefa, we can be mekil, we can be lenient with regard to it. The egel, when it was still in the mother, had yom tov value, in that you could have given this pregnant trefa animal to your dogs. Dogs would consume that. And you're obligated to feed your dogs on Yom Tov. So here you have a unit, mother, trefa mother, pregnant with calf, something fit for dogs. Mashen ken afrochi, as opposed to a chick in a shell, dogs aren't going to eat that. So Rav could have maintained his ground that chick hatched on Yom Tov is usur, and not be challenged by the case of calf coming from trefa. So now we continue in the Gemara. We'll read again three lines from the bottom. After Rav remained silent based on the challenge from the case of Egel Shalomna Trefa and Shosik Rav, Omar Rav of Itamer of Yosef, my time of Shosik Rav, why did Rav concede to the challenge? Why did he keep quiet? Lemolahu, let him have responded. Ha'il, since the case of the egel from the trefa, umuchon agav imoy leklovim, it was fit while still in its mother, the trefa, to be fed to the dogs, as opposed to the chick in the eggshell, where even a dog wouldn't eat that. Omar Le Abaye. By following the geometric symbols, this then represents a response to why did Rav keep quiet? Why did he see it as a challenge? In other words, as far as Rav is concerned, the case of the egel from the trefa is parallel, can be parallel to the case of the chick in the eggshell. Omar Le Abaye. Now, we should point out that this response of Abaye is a long response, so take note of the long marking that you see here, because as we read the Gemara, there's also a bracketed section that we're going to skip for this, just to make the reading easier. Abaye says, Hashto muchon la'odam lo have muchon la'klovim, something that is fit, is prepared for man, is not prepared for the dogs. Muchon leklovim have a muchon leadam, something like the trefa, which is available for dogs. Are you going to say that is considered muchon, is available, it's prepared for man, that we should be matir the egel? Once again, what's Abaye saying? Mind you, something that is fit for people, it's muchan, it's prepared for people, and it's not considered prepared for the dogs. Something that's prepared for the dogs, you would say, is prepared for a person, and on those grounds, be matir, allow the egel born from the trefa? Omar lei, Rabbo says in, yes. Muchan le'odam, lohavi muchan le'klovim, that which we say, something that is prepared for man, is not to be given to the dogs. The ma'idechazi le inish, that which is fit for a person, lo shodi le leklovim, he's not going to throw that which he himself would eat. He's not going to throw that to the dogs. Muchon leklovim, on the other hand, something that is fit for the dogs, like the case of the trefa, Have muchan la'adam. Whatever aspect of that that could be used by a person is considered prepared for the person. The daite the inish akol midi the chazilai. A person's mind is on whatever could be fit for him. So that as far as the trefa is concerned, there still is a distinction between the trefa and the chicken coming from the egg. The case of the egel hanolad min ha-trefa is muchan l'klavim through the mother, so the egel that's born afterwards is muchan for me. But the egg shell containing a chick wasn't even available for the dogs. And that being the case, there is a distinction between the egel hanolad min ha-trefa and the Efroch Shuk Min HaBeitza. So the question is, why did Rav keep quiet when he was challenged by that case? Now, we must go over the Gemara again because we skipped a section with the brackets. Abaye tries to defend Rav's position of equating them. And Abaye tries to argue that just like Rav said that the chick in the shell was not muchan, so too the egel coming from the trefa is not really muchan. And Abaye says, and we're reading the Gemara again from the very bottom of Omer Aleph, Omer Le Abaye, and we continue to the top of Omer Beis, Hashto. Muchan li adam lo havi muchan l'klovin. Something that is prepared for man is not available for the dogs. Disnan. We have the following source: mechatrim es adluim lifnei abehema v'shanavei lifnei aklovin. One is allowed to chop dluin. Dluin is some type of large vegetation to feed, and you chop it up into more edible sized pieces for an animal. V'shanavei lo lifnei aklovin. And one can chop up a dead animal, an avela, to feed the dogs. Rebuta Omer, im lo hois nevelim erev Yom Tov, if it wasn't dead, erev Yom Tov, if it died on Yom Tov, asura, it's usur to chop up the nevela that died on Yom Tov, l'fisheinom in a muchan. It's not muchan, it wasn't muchan for the dogs, because at the onset of Yom Tov, this was a live animal, and it was muchan for people. People were anticipating slaughtering it and making fine steak from it. The fact that it died on Yom Tov, sorry, it can't be given to the dogs, says Rav Yehuda. It wasn't muchan. So this is an example of something that had been muchan for a person. It's not muchan for the dogs. Muchan leklovim, we continue reading, muchan leklovim, have muchan liadam. Are you going to say that something that was available for the dogs, like the mother trefa that was pregnant with its calf, is have muchan liadam, that the calf is going to be considered available and prepared for the person, that we should allow the egel to be eaten? So Abaye is saying that as far as I'm concerned, the egel is usur, just like the chick coming from the shell, and therefore I understand why Rav remained silent, that he holds that the chick coming from the shell, Rav ruled is usur. How can they try to challenge him with the case of a calf born from a trefa, when that too should be usur? Omar Lay, Rabba says not so. In other words, that the case of the calf being born from the trefa, that in fact is different, and it is mutter. And he says, yes, there is a difference between something that's muchan l'adam is not muchan l'klavim, but something that's muchan l'klavim is very well, yes, muchan l'adam. Amar le in muchan li adam lohavi muchan leklovim. Something that is prepared for man is not available for dogs. Demai dechazi le linish, something that is fit for a man lo shadi le leklovim. He has no intention of giving it to the dogs whatsoever. However, muchan leklovim, something that is prepared for dogs, have muchan la adam, it is considered available for people. A person's mind is on that whatever is fit for him. He doesn't relinquish his access to something that is fit for him, and that would be the case of the treifa that's pregnant with an egel. That true, it's muchan leklovim. That doesn't preclude the calf upon its birth from being available for man. And that is in contrast to the case of the basis, the egg with the efroyach, that wasn't even muchan leklovin. And as a result, I don't understand why Rav remained silent. Tanyo kavose de Rav, Tanyo kavose de Shmuel. We have Tanaic sources supporting Rav that asserted the chick coming from the shell on Yom Tov, and we have a source supporting Shmuel that was lenient. Tanyo kavose de Rav. The diamonds introduce the two sources. You can see under the mivne heading on the side, Tanyo kavose de Rav and the Shmuel sources supporting both of these opinions. So the first source supports Rav. Tanyo kavose de Rav, egel shenole b'yom tov mutar. A calf born on Yom Tov is allowed. Efroch shenole b'yom tov aser. Chick hatching from shell on Yom Tov is aser. Ma hefresh bein zeh, what's the difference between the two? Answer, zeh muchan agav imo b'shchita. The case of the calf was fit even before it was born, through shechting its mother with the egel inside, and that shechita would have been matir the egel as well. It covers the mother and the egel, so the egel upon its birth isn't going from a state of prohibition to something that is mutter. It was mutter all along. V'zeh, the case of the efroach, hatching from the shell, eino muchan agavimo. It wasn't prepared while it was still in the shell. Imo, in this case, is its original state being in the shell. So while it was in the shell, it had no heter, there was no permission. Tanyo kavose de Shmuel v'temor of Yochanan, and a Tanaic source to support the side of leniency. Egel shenolad b'yom tov mutter, calf born on Yom Tov is allowed, and v'efroch shenolad b'yom tov mutter, chick hatching from shell on Yom Tov is allowed. My taimo, why is that? Ze muchon agavimo, the calf is mutter because it was always mutter through its mother. Its mother could have been shechted, and that would have allowed the unborn calf to be eaten. Veze, the case of the chick hatching from the shell, matir atzmo b'shchita, through its hatching from the shell, it now is allowed to be shechted. So just like we remove the iser of shechita, namely it now can be shechted, we remove the iser of muktzah through its being born, through its hatching. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading: din efroach koidem shiniftach einof. The law regarding a chick before it opens its eyes. Tonu Rabbanan, Efroach shenolad b'yom tov aser. A chick that hatches on Yom Tov is prohibited. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, af b'chol aser. A freshly hatched chick is aser even on a weekday, lefi shelo nispatchu einov, because it hasn't opened its eyes. Keman az lo hodesan. We have a Tanaic source with no name, and we want to figure out according to whom is this source. The pasuk says, "L'chol hasheretz hasheretz al ha'aretz." The pasuk is warning against the consumption of shrotzim. Shrotzim are unkosher creatures, generally thought to be very stout-legged, short creatures that give the impression of scampering along on the ground. Now, the Pasuk says, L'chol Hasher Sashrasa. So you have an inclusive expression here. L'rabos, this includes, in prohibition, Ephrichim Shelo Nispathu Einehem, including chicks that haven't opened their eyes. Even though, technically speaking, a chicken is not a sheretz, but a chick whose eyes haven't opened is categorized as a sheretz, a prohibited creature. Come on. Who would this conform to? Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. This follows his teaching that that permission is restricted in the case of unopened eyes of chicks. We continue in the Gemara with a new discussion, and before we learn the Gemara itself, let's glance at the side at our topic heading, and also as it says no say, and we indicate this goes till Zion Omer Aleph, Dino Shel Rav Huna. We're going to be focusing on Rav Huna's teaching. Rav Huna quotes Rav, Beitza im Yitziosa Nigmra. The egg upon its exit is complete. A very vague statement. If you are looking at the Gemara text, you'll notice some marking. You have the use of double underlines and bow ties. On the side, under the Mivne heading, the double underline represents Arba Shlovim, four stages, Kedei Lahazbir Kavonas Rav Huna, in order to explain what did Rav Huna mean when he says, Beitzim Yishas Enigmara. So, as we go through the Gemara, you can see the double underlining, and this particular marking will continue to Zion Omid Aleph. The bow tie, you can see, highlights the word ha. Bochanim ha-hezberim shenoyslim l'din Rav Huna means we're going to test out, we're going to check out the veracity, the authenticity of the answers that we give for Rav Huna al yidei diyukim, through inferences that can be drawn from the answers that we give. And if the inference is accurate, so then the answer that we give is accurate. If we find a problem in the inference that we make to be inaccurate, so then the answer that we give is not accurate. So now we turn to the Gemara. My im yitziyosa nigmara, what does that mean? Ilema im yitziyosa nigmara umuteras loch lebecholov. If it means that an egg, once it is laid, you can now have a cheese. You can make it into a cheese omelet. You can eat it with milk. Then we would infer ha b'mei imon asur loch lebecholov. But an egg found inside a chicken. Let's say you slaughtered a chicken and you found inside it complete eggs. You would not be allowed to eat it with milk. But that's not true. V'hatanya, hashochez a tarnagul. That's one who slaughters a chicken, who motzabo beitzim gemuros, and he finds complete eggs contained within. Mutoros lochlan b'cholov. You can make them into a cheese omelet. So since the inference is not accurate, so the original answer is not going to be a satisfactory explanation for what Rav Huna Omar Rav said. Beit Soim Yisosa Nigmara. What does that mean? Elo im Yisosa Nigmara umuteres liochlo biyomtov. So that, what would this mean? That if an egg definitely came out of the chicken while it's still day, meaning yomtov has not set in. So, under those circumstances, you can eat the egg on Yom Tov. Very simply, because it was completed b'chol. It was completed on a weekday. That gives rise to an inference. Ha b'mei imo asur loch lo b'yom tov. An egg found inside a chicken on Yom Tov would be Aser. But that's not true. V'ha Tanya. We have a Tanaic source that says, HaShoycher es ha-tarnegoles u-motzah ba-beitzim gemurois mutoros lochlon b'Yom Tov. Someone shechts a chicken, he slaughters a chicken on Yom Tov and finds inside the chicken complete eggs. You're allowed to eat those eggs on Yom Tov. So that the suggested answer at stage two gives rise to an inference that's not accurate. So we can't accept this explanation. However, the Gemara isn't giving up so quickly. The Chitema, you might want to say, Komash molon bebraisa, my delo ashmeinen bemasnisen. Rashi explains that you might try to say that Rav Huna is teaching me that the halacha does not follow this braisa, because it's teaching me a din that you don't find in Mishnayos. And there's a rule that exists in the Shas that a braisa that exists in a vacuum, in other words, it has no basis in Mishnaic literature, it's considered an unreliable braisa. So maybe that's what Rav Huna is telling me. And hence, if the braisa is trying to say here that complete eggs found inside the mother are mutter, no, that's simply inaccurate. So that the inference that we thought led us to something that's not true, that's not the case. However, this is not accurate, because ha nami tanina, we have a Mishnah that in fact does teach that very point. Beitza shenolda biyomtov. Beishamay umrim teachel, beisil umrim lo teachel. Our Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the Perek. Beitza that's born, that's laid on Yom Tov. Here you have a machlokes between Beishamay, who says it's allowed, Beisil says it's not allowed. V'ad kan lo pligi Beishamay Hillel ela benolda. Their whole machlokes is concerning the laid egg. Avo b'mei imon, divrei hakol sharyon, but found inside the mother. Everyone agrees the egg is mutter. Well, according to answer number two, we try to say that the egg is going to be mutter only if it was laid before Yom Tov, leaving us to conclude that if it's found inside the chicken on Yom Tov, it's not mutter. But that's not true. So what are we going to do? How do we masbir Rav Huna? V'chitema, maybe you'll say. Before we go further, let's just make one point, make something very clear. The braisa that was on the second, third wide line of the Gemara at this point is an acceptable source. And it is acceptable because of the first Mishnah, the Perek. The first Mishnah, the Perek, and that which we just inferred from it, serves as a basis for the teaching in that braisa. So it's a good braisa. However, we've got to offer an explanation for Rav Huna, and so far we're not making progress. Because according to Hesber number 2, we're trying to say that if it were found inside the mother, it would not be allowed. That information is not true. V'chitema, you might want to say, Beis Hillel, afilu b'mei imo nami Asri. Oh, maybe Beis Hillel holds, like Rav Huna, according to answer number 2, that eggs found inside the mother, Beis Hillel would aser. V'hai dekotoni nolda, and that which Beis Hillel expressed their restriction only in the case of nolda, it's not that it's exclusive of found inside, but simply, why did the Mishnah teach nolda? Lo diacha kechon the Beis Shammai, to show us how far Beis Shammai goes in his leniency, da filu nolda, even when it's born, even when it comes forth, it wasn't even there before Yom Tov, even then, Nami Sharu, they allow that. So that if this be the case, Beis Hillel is going to go like Rav Huna, and that's very good for Rav Huna, that even inside the mother it's Asur, and Beis Shammai is saying even born it's allowed. Well then, what about the Brisa we had before? Eloha Desanya. The Brisa that we had before that we said is accurate. It's not going to have an author now. It said, Hashoichet es ha-tarnagos, u-motzabo beitzim gemuros. You shechted a chicken, found inside it complete eggs. Mutars lo'ochlan b'yomtov. You're allowed to eat those eggs on yomtov. Money. Who is the author of this Brisa? Lo Beis Shammai, v'lo Beis Hillel. It's not going to be like Beis Shammai because if this were a Beis Shammai source, it would have told you a bigger chiddush. It would have told you that even laid eggs, even nolda, is mutter. And it's certainly not Beis Hillel, because you're claiming Beis Hillel will answer the eggs found inside, and this source allows them. So the approach that we've taken with regard to Rav Huna in explanation number two leads us up a wall right now. In other words, we're up against a wall. We can't accept explanation number two that says only if they're laid before Yom Tov will they be mutter, leaving us to think that if it's found inside, it will be usser. That is just, that's not accurate information. Ella, stage 3. Im yitziyasa nigmara, umigadela sefroichim. Rav Huna is not telling us any halachas that regard Yom Tov. Rav Huna is teaching halachas that regard commerce. And he's telling us a point of information, that laid eggs, they are now complete and capable of producing chicks. In other words, a laid egg will, if left to incubate, will produce a chick. But an egg found inside a chicken, even if that chicken happened to have mated with a rooster, obviously, that otherwise there's nothing to talk about, but it hasn't been laid yet. The egg has not emerged from the chicken. Eino megadol sefrochem. From that kind of egg, even if you leave it to incubate, it won't produce a chick. A chick will not develop in an unlaid egg, even if it was fertilized. Lamai nafgamina. What of what value is this information? Lamekach umemkar. It has value with regard to commerce. Very simply, if I went to a vendor and I ordered eggs for chick production, and he supplied me with eggs that were found inside slaughtered chickens, I would claim this is a mekach tos. It's a deal that can be called off. We have a brackets, and you'll notice it's a very long brackets. It takes you to the first wide line on Zayin Amud Aleph, and let's skip them momentarily. A fourth approach to explain Rav Huna. Im Yitzias Ruba Nigmara. With the emergence of the majority of the egg from the hen, it becomes allowed. Now, what does that mean? In order to appreciate that, you have to read on in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan, based on Rabbi Yochanan's teaching, Yom Rabbi Yochanan, Beitza Shiyotza, Ruba Me'erev Yomtov V'Chazra. Imagine this, an egg that emerges, the majority of the egg emerges from the hen, but it gets sucked back into the mother, to the hen. And then on Yom Tov, it comes out completely, V'Chazra, and it comes out on Yom Tov. It's mutter to eat that egg. In other words, it doesn't come under the prohibition of a beitzah shenolda biyomtov, because its leida, its real birth, its emergence took place with the majority that had emerged Erev Yom Tov, before the onset of Yom Tov. The Ika di Omar, another version of this is my Im Yitzyasa Digmara. Here you can see again a double underline, so it's a variation, and we're going to be calling this four bays. The first was four aleph. We're going to explain now what does Im Yitzyasa Nigmara mean. Im Yitzyas Ruba Kula Nigmara. Im Yitzyas Kula In Avo Ruba Lo. The second approach says that Im Yitzyasa, with its emergence, means with its complete emergence, then it's considered having been laid. Only complete emergence and not majority emergence. Majority emergence is not considered its having been laid. Ula fuke midi Rabbi Yochanan, to the exclusion of Rabbi Yochanan's approach, who would have been more lenient, allowing us to consider its being laid even with just the majority coming out and not the entire egg coming out. So this section of Gemara is our fourth. Comes in two parts. Fourth explanation for Rav Huna Amar Rav. What did he mean when he said Beitza Mitzyasa Nigmara? It should be noted that the fourth explanation, the fourth stage, does go back to the issue of Yom Tov. The third stage represented an explanation that was not Yom Tov related. Now, what we have to do is we have to go over the bracketed section, and with that we will be concluding our shiur. The fourth explanation we already read and gave a sufficient explanation. But in the meantime, we go back to the third stage, where Rav Huna Amar Rav is telling us a matter of commercial value, that a laid egg coming from a fertilized hen, where the rooster had mated with the hen, will the egg produce a chick? Well, it depends. If the egg came out of the mother, it was laid, yes. If the egg that had been fertilized, but it was found inside the hen as a result of slaughtering the hen, so that kind of egg will not produce a chick. And as we turn to the Gemara, we also notice a marking within the brackets. There's a diamond, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, we've written two mikrim, two cases, shalmekach umemkar bebeitzim, of commerce concerning eggs, shalokech bikesh beitzim mufrim mizocher, where the comment to both cases is where the customer requested fertilized eggs. So these cases are here to illustrate the Gemara's point of the knowledge of a laid egg, and only that is capable of producing chicks, has commercial ramifications. Ki hahu diomar lahu, like the following case of a customer, someone was asking, Bei'ai, we continue at the top of Zion Mal Aleph, de pachyo laman, who has laid eggs? Pachyo, Rashi gives the etymology, has to do with making sounds. And a hen, as it's laying its eggs, it cackles, it makes noise. So the customer is asking for laid eggs. Yahvule be deshchuta. And the customer was given eggs that were not laid, given eggs that were found inside a slaughtered hen. Also, the kame de Rabbi Ami, the case came to Rabbi Ami, the customer was dissatisfied, Omar Lahu, and Rabbi Ami ruled, Mekach tois hu vahodar. This is a deal made under mistaken pretenses, and hence it is to be reversed. Hodar means, say, called off or reversed. The customer gets his money back, and you take back the eggs. Well, it says pshita, it's obvious. It's obvious that it's a mekartos, it's a mistaken deal. He asked for laid eggs, and you didn't give him what he wanted. So, what do I need Rav Ami's ruling for, that he has to, it's obvious, isn't it? No. Mahu the Tema, without Rav Ami and his ruling that it's a Mekach Tolos and the deal is called off, I would have thought, Hi L'Achila Kobaya Lahu, this guy who's asking for laid eggs, he wants eggs for eating purposes. V'hai Degomer Depachya, that he says I want laid eggs, Mishum Ditzrivan, they're completely developed. They're more developed. But he wants them for eating. L'may nafkamina, what difference is there to a customer that's asking for eggs with an eating intention? What difference does it make whether it's laid or it's found inside a shchuta? L'mesvale beini beini. The difference there is that we wouldn't call off the deal, but the seller would have to compensate the buyer with the difference in value between laid eggs and eggs in the found in the shchuta. Kol mashmalon, what Rav Ami is revealing to us is that when a person asks for laid eggs, his intention is for chick production, and someone like that has no value in receiving shchuta eggs. They won't produce chicks, and that's why the deal is to be called off. So once again, without Rav Ami's teaching, I would have thought to consider someone who's insisting on Bei Depachya, he's just interested in buying eggs for eating. He's given less developed eggs, also fit for eating. So offer compensation for the difference in value, but you're not going to call off the deal. Komashmalon, as we said at the end, that Rav Ami tells us, no, when someone comes and asks, when he asks for laid eggs, his intention is for chick production. And in that context, the shchuta eggs have no value. They won't produce chicks. The deal is therefore called off. Continuing in the Gemara, Hahu d'yomar lehu, bei d'dichro l'man, bei d'dichro l'man. There was a person here who was asking for fertilized eggs. Rashi says, the dichro shi'oldosan tarnagolis mi tarnagol velo nischamu min akaku l'koltin b'lo zohar. With regard to hens laying eggs, there are two paths. A hen that mated with a rooster, it will lay its eggs as a normal course of events. If a hen did not mate with a rooster, eggs will emerge from the hen if the hen warms itself up through maybe friction or rubbing on the ground. And by doing that, eggs will emerge as well, even if they're not fertilized. So you have a person who was asking for bei d'dichra. These are d'chra is the word zohar, the Dalet and the Zion interchange. He's asking for that. Yohavulei beya d'safna miara, and the supplier gave him unfertilized eggs. Safna me'ara is, as we said before, that the hen heated herself up on the ground by rubbing on the ground, and that's what produced the eggs, and it has caused the eggs to emerge. Also the kamei de Rabami. The case came to Rabami, Omar Luhu, Mekach Tosu, Vahadar. The deal is a mistake, and therefore it's called off, and everything is reversed. The money is given back. Well, it says pshita. Well, that's obvious. The guy asked for fertilized eggs. What do you? And he's giving him something that's not fertilized. It's obvious. It's different than what he asks. So mahu detemo. Without Rav Ami and his ruling, I might have thought, hi lachilo kaboy lahu. The person who was asking for fertilized eggs, he's interested in making omelets from it. He wants it for eating. So you might ask them, why was it so important that they're fertilized? Mishum deshaminon tvei. They're richer. Fertilized eggs are richer. They'll make a better omelet. And Well, if that's the case, that he wanted it for eating and he got these, and he didn't get what he asked for, but he got the other kind that are also for eating, lamai nafkamina, what is the practical legal ramification in a case like that? Lamesfile beini ubeini, that lebeini beini, that means that the supplier would have to give, return the difference in value between the rich fertilized eggs that are for eating versus the less rich unfertilized eggs that he got for making his omelet. Kamash Malon, what Rav Ami reveals to us is that when someone asks for fertilized eggs, he's not interested at all in omelet making. He's interested in producing chicks from those eggs. And he got something that is unfertilized, hence a total mekartos. And we pointed out structurally that the continuation more, which we read already, is a fourth explanation for Rav Huna Amar Rav's din of Beitzei Mitzos Nigmara, which was, and the fourth explanation was an explanation, is a throwback to dinim of Yom Tov. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.